Hello, everyone, and happy Monday. Today, we're going to take a deep dive into the inner workings of the unconscious mind. I've been wanting to learn more about this topic for a while now, and I finally decided to read a book and pursue some more knowledge about it that I can't wait to share with you all. Welcome back to Keeping It Real with Kennedy. So to start digging into the daunting topic of the unconscious mind, I began by reading the book Before You Know It, The Unconscious Reasons We Do What We Do by John Barg, PhD. The overarching premise of this book is that, quote, the mind exists simultaneously in the past, present, and future. Our conscious experience is the sum of these three parts as they interact inside one individual brain. Barg asserts that we all have a hidden past, a hidden present, and a hidden future that are all influencing us unconsciously before we know it. He argues that it is impossible to be in only the present, no matter how much we consciously think that we are. We are always in three dimensions or time zones at once, though the present often seems like the loudest or the most obvious one to us. Now, historically as humans, our evolution has progressed depending on our two main goals as a species of survival and reproduction, which both compel us towards all kinds of unconscious motivations for our conscious actions, such as craving physical safety, avoiding contamination and disease, sharing information through emotions, altruistically helping our friends and family, and all the other motivations we have for doing the things we do. As humans, a lot of our emotions are unconscious, but we can also make them conscious when we want to or need to, like when we pretend to be surprised about something, or when we pretend to like a gift that we actually don't really like. The facial expression of emotions helps us build social bonds with others in a way that spoken and written language isn't even always necessary. I mean, how did you think the tribes communicated way back in the day? There has always been this intrinsic and unconscious human desire to share our emotions, experiences, and activities socially with others. As we grow up, our parents both consciously and unconsciously give or do not give us love, guidance, and punishment. One of the most powerful influences our parents have on us is whether or not we form a basic trust in other people. Our infant attachment styles are more or less set by the time we're 1 year old, and all four attachment styles are based on a foundation of or a lack of trust. This capacity to trust others that we get handed down to us by our parents then has a major influence on our capacity to succeed later in life in both friendship and in love. Yet, we have absolutely no memory of the early experiences that caused this effect on our adult successes and relationships because it all happened before we were just 1 year old. This translates to an unconscious drive called early childhood amnesia, and it is present deep within us for the rest of our lives. As evidenced by many infant studies. We're all born into the world with an unconscious preference for people who are similar to us. Studies show that babies demonstrate a visual preference for people of their same race or ethnic group, as well as to the sounds and tones of their own native language, even if they don't speak or understand any of the words quite yet. Now, this preference for people similar to us was key to our evolution as a species because we needed to trust our own tribe and group in order to survive together. In the past, other humans from other tribes or groups could really present a dangerous threat to us. Fast forward to today, however, the world is now a cultural mixing pot of diverse people coexisting together in harmony. And while this is an amazing and a great thing, what a lot of people sometimes forget these days is that deep inside each and every one of us still lives that evolved preference for our own group, and to some extent against other groups that look, sound, and act differently than we do. Now, this makes me kind of sad because for all the superficial things that make us all so different from each other, there are so many more things that make us the same, like our basic human needs for safety and trust, a desire to live a good life and take care of the people we love. Now, this topic reminds me of a conversation I had with another student back when I was studying abroad in China. To this day, I still think about it relatively often. I took a history class abroad in China back in 2016, and one day when we were there, we went to a local university. The Chinese students there were learning English, and our job for the day was just to have conversations with them so they could have the experience of talking to real American native English speakers. I was 19 at the time and really felt like I was living the dream. I had so much fun that day. One One conversation I'll never forget was with a girl who was telling me this story about how her dorm she was living in didn't allow pets, but she hid a cat in her bathroom for an entire semester. Now, I don't remember all the details of the story, but what I do remember is the feeling I had afterwards. As we're having this conversation, two seemingly so different people from entirely different cultures halfway across the world from each other, I couldn't help but realize how we were essentially the same. I mean, come on, I would have loved to hide a pet in college, and I remember laughing so hard throughout the story while she was telling it to me. I related to her on a personal level. Our differences didn't matter. The diversity of the modern world is such a beautiful thing. I have such a deep respect for and genuine interest in other cultures and people of different backgrounds than my own. The human experience fascinates me and drives me to read books like the one that I'm talking about on this podcast, and study biology and psychology and philosophy, and dig deep for answers to why we do the things that we do. Now, the reality is that our in-group bias that was once an adaptive trait and helped us survive before there was refrigeration and electricity and the internet has now become a maladaptive trait that often has serious consequences. Think about it. We are watching evolution before our very eyes right now with natural selection at work every single day. Diversity, equity, and inclusion jobs and committees are now forming all over the world to help protect the positive effects of the globalization of humanity. So when people are racist or not inclusive or unjust to people of other races and cultures, natural selection is at work weeding them out in the form of social exclusion, public disgrace, job loss, and more. Raising culturally competent and respectful children in today's day and age will literally change the course of human history. And we right now are at such a pivotal point in evolution, like right now in 2024. It's just so fascinating. Sorry, don't get me going on this stuff because it's hard for me to stop sometimes. So anyways, one big influence on our unconscious mind is the weather. One study looking at this association had a researcher randomly call students from the University of Illinois and ask them four questions about their overall life satisfaction. And what they found was that when consciously asked about the weather beforehand, the students' opinions about their life satisfaction didn't change much. However, when not consciously prompted to describe whether it was a sunny or a rainy day before answering the questions about their life, the researchers found that on sunny days, students rated their overall life satisfaction as higher than they did on rainy days, which in theory has no influence on our overall quality of life as a whole. The weather unconsciously affected their answers without them realizing it. Studies have also found that stock market returns studied over a period of 15 years, while controlled for external variables, were better on sunny days than on gloomy days. The researchers of this study said, quote, "Our results are difficult to reconcile with fully rational price setting. There is no appealing, rational explanation for why morning sunshine near a country's stock exchange should be associated with higher market index returns. This evidence is, however, consistent with sunlight affecting mood and mood affecting prices." End quote. Now, I feel like this is easy to intuitively understand. Like, you know how good you feel when that first real warm, sunny spring day hits after you've been through the dead of winter? I know my mood, both consciously and unconsciously, skyrockets. But what we often don't realize is that the weather can impact things like how we feel in our gut when someone calls us. For example, on a sunny day, your boss or an acquaintance calling you out of the blue might not be as bad as it is on a rainy day, you know, things like that. Okay, so going back to time and space for a minute, the only moment Einstein ever believed to exist was the present. He once famously said, quote, "The distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion." End quote. And this goes into our theme from the first episode of season 3 of this podcast that aired 3 weeks ago. Reality isn't real. It's just what's real to you. And everyone in the world lives in their own little quote-unquote realities. Your reality is the culmination of whatever your senses and your personal thoughts have told you to be true. Other people think different thoughts or may even lack some of the senses that you attribute to reality, like sight or hearing, for example. Their reality is entirely different than yours, but both of them can coexist in harmony as the definition of reality. It has been studied in patients with amnesia or memory loss that the brain will unconsciously respond to protect them from harmful things, even though they have lost their conscious memory of what things in their environment could be harmful. For example, one study had a doctor give a firm handshake to a patient with Korsakoff amnesia, whose amnesia was so severe that she forgot her conscious memory every 15 minutes. But here's the kicker. He gave her a noxious stimulus with the first handshake, a pointed pin in his hand that pricked her when they shook hands. And then after a conversation of longer than her memory could recall, the doctor concluded the conversation by reaching out for another handshake, this time with no pin to prick her with. And what did she do? She withdrew her hand quickly just before they were about to make contact. When he asked her why she wouldn't shake his hand, she gave vague explanations and couldn't consciously remember or recall why she didn't want to shake his hand, but her unconscious mind and brain was fast at work and unaffected by her conscious amnesia. The unconscious mind still remembered, even though the conscious mind forgot. Since the dawn of time, all organisms, not just humans, come into the world hardwired with good-bad and approach-withdraw reflexes, where we approach good things and withdraw from bad things. It helped us survive when predators were among us, and now helps us stay close and connected to the people we trust, similar to fight or flight in a way. When we appraise a stimulus as good, we are likely to approach it, as a bee approaches a beautiful flower filled with nectar. On the contrary, when we judge an environmental stimulus to be bad, we typically withdraw from it as when a sea turtle sees a tiger shark lurking off in the distance, ready to hunt it for prey. Now, psychologists are now using the innate human evaluation of good versus bad and the subsequent approach withdrawal response that comes from it for good to fight against things like racism and alcoholism. And guess what? It works. So in recent studies, researchers have had participants come into a lab where they are told to either push or pull a lever when certain pictures come on the screen in front of them. To fight racism, researchers had white participants pull the lever when a black person was on the screen and push the lever when the white person was on the screen. And then to combat alcoholism, the researchers had them push the lever for drink-related pictures like wine bottles and corkscrews and pull the lever for other non-drink-related pictures. Their results? In line with the good-bad approach-withdrawal reflex, when white people pulled the lever closer to them, stimulating an approach, when they saw a photo of a black person, they later actually changed their unconscious racial attitudes because good things were associated with this approach or pulling closer to oneself. In the alcoholism study, people who did the exercise for 2 weeks demonstrated changes in their unconscious attitudes about drinking from positive to negative due to the fact that they had to push or withdraw the lever when environmentally stimulated by quote-unquote bad alcohol. The best part? After a 1-year follow-up, the participants who simply pushed a lever for 2 weeks when they saw a picture of a shot glass had significantly lower relapse rates of alcoholism than those in the control condition who didn't push away the lever for those pictures. Now, this is the heart of psychological study and intervention. We can truly and genuinely, unconsciously change our attitudes for the better by doing some of the simplest tasks that you could even set up in your own home if you wanted. Like, all you need is a slideshow of pictures and a lever. Have you ever heard of the phrase, trust your gut? I know I have, and it's something my parents still tell me from time to time when I'm struggling to make a decision to this day. So in his book, Barg presents us with 8 basic rules for when to trust your gut, and I'll read them to you here now. Number 1, supplement your gut impulse with at least a little conscious reflection if you have the time to do so. Number 2, when you don't have the time to think about it, don't take big chances for small gains going on your gut alone. It could be life or death, or it could be something rather trivial. So just know the stakes of the situation. Number 3, when you're faced with a complex decision involving many factors, especially when you don't have objective measurements or reliable data of those important factors, take your gut feelings seriously. Throughout our evolution as humans, unconscious judgments historically produced reasonably accurate guidance for our behavior. Unconscious decisions tend to be better when the judgment is complex and involving many different dimensions or features that have to be combined and integrated, like when you choose a car or an apartment, for example. Conscious thought is powerful, but it's limited as to the complexity of what it can consider at any given moment. Our conscious mind can handle about up to 3 things at once comfortably, but any more than that becomes a stretch. Number 4, be careful what you wish for, because your future goals and needs will influence what you want and like in the present. Number 5, when our initial gut reaction to a person of a different race or ethnic group is negative, we should stifle it. These reactions are likely either a remnant of our evolutionary past, like we talked about before, or a product of our culture through mass media. Give people a chance and evaluate them based on their actual behavior instead. Number 6, We should not trust our appraisals of others based on their faces alone or on photographs before we've had any interaction with them. Have you ever heard of resting face anyone when a girl looks really but then you find out she's actually really nice? Number 7, you can trust your gut about other people, but only after you have seen them in action. And number 8, it is perfectly fine for attraction to be one part of the romantic equation, but not so fine to let it be the only or even the main thing. So as the book discusses on page 221, a study done a while ago in 1978 demonstrated that the way we reconstruct memories of a situation is strikingly dependent on the goal that we have in that situation. In this study, they had people watch an identical video of a residential home tour. One group was asked to watch it as if they were potential home buyers, and the other group to watch it as potential home burglars. After watching the same exact video, the two groups had created conscious memories of very different things, and each group picked up on things that the other had missed entirely, depending on their goal at the time. And so this demonstrates the fact that our memories are not accurate copies, but rather just versions of our experiences of our relative personal reality that are filtered and edited by our personal goals and preferences. Haven't you ever wondered how two people can experience the same exact event and remember it happening completely differently? A combination of conscious and unconscious personal motivations are always at play in our perceptions of reality, and thus in our memories of what quote-unquote really happened at all times. One of the first ever psychological scientists, Frederick Myers, once said that, quote, genius is the ability to make use of subliminal or unconscious thought more than most people do or can. The inspiration of genius or creative breakthroughs comes from a rush of unconscious ideas into the conscious stream of ideas that the person is intentionally manipulating. Brilliant insights come from making more use of the unconscious powers of the mind than most people do, end quote. So the instincts of people like Michael Jordan on the basketball court are just another word for unconscious processes. So when Michael Jordan or anyone else gets in, quote unquote, the zone, his or her or their unconscious mind clicks into its highest gear, and the conscious mind calmly adds its own unique contributions as necessary. Now, to take full advantage of this unconscious help within ourselves, because that sounds pretty great, right? We have to first do the conscious work. Michael Jordan, Einstein, and all the other greats didn't just dream up creative solutions without putting in significant amounts of conscious time and effort into solving their desired goals and problems. Now, venturing into the overlap of the unconscious with the topic of sleep, Barg says that, quote, the sleeping human brain continuously processes sensory signals even when we are literally unconscious during sleep, and then triggers our full conscious awakening to important critical stimuli, like our baby's crying, in less than a second, end quote. That's insane. Less than a second. But it's only if our unconscious mind decides that the sensory signal is important or not. Like, it often just lets us keep sleeping if the fan goes off or if there's even like a stimulating TV show on. Our unconscious still lets us just fall asleep. Switching gears a little bit, have you ever been anxious or worried about something, like a test coming up or a doctor's appointment? And has that worry or anxiety kept you up at night so much that you felt like you couldn't sleep because your mind was racing? And then when you got up in the morning from what little sleep you got, if any, those anxious thoughts were already back at it again in the forefront of your mind. I'm going to read an entire paragraph from chapter 9 titled The Unconscious Never Sleeps in its entirety from the book, because the simplicity of this explanation seemed like a no-duh revelation to me as I was reading it. So here we go, quote, why did the mind, working unconsciously on these problems while the person slept, have to nag and bother them about the problem as soon as they woke up? Because the problems were important and time-sensitive ones that could not be solved unconsciously, like through normal sleep and dreaming. They needed conscious problem-solving help. So as soon as the person woke up, as soon as their conscious mind was online again, these pressing goals and concerns were waiting for them in their mental inbox. In particular, what the unconscious process was asking for while keeping them up was a concrete plan. This is the specialty of conscious thought processes, and not something that can be done unconsciously. So the unconscious process just nags at you. Once you have a conscious plan in place, the nagging tends to stop. You might even be able to get back to sleep, end quote. It's really that simple. All your mind needs when it races with anxiety in 20 different directions at night, thinking about your big performance the next day, is a plan. In hindsight, I probably could have clocked a few more hours of sleep at night in the past if I knew that a few years ago. The author's three main points or key takeaways from Before You Know It are, 1, your conscious thoughts matter. This means, according to what psychologists mean by the term, you have quote-unquote free will, but it is not as complete and all-powerful as you might have believed. 2, acknowledging that you do not have complete free will or complete conscious control actually increases the amount of free will and conscious control you truly have. 3, the most effective self-control is not through willpower or exerting effort to stifle impulses and unwanted behaviors. It comes from effectively harnessing the unconscious powers of the mind to much more easily do the self-control for you. In the last chapter, Barg says that his goal for this book is to be useful to anyone and everyone interested in learning how understanding your mind can help you understand yourself better and thereby better yourself. But no one person exists in isolation. No benefit accrues in a vacuum. We all send ripples in all directions as our social networks, both digital and non-digital, are filled with interactions of friends, family, acquaintances, and strangers. And if we truly better ourselves, we have a chance at bettering our community and, by extension, our world. But this process requires the humility to accept that we don't fully understand why we do what we do all of the time. Like, I've done things that I'm like, why did I do that? That was so dumb. You look like an idiot, like looking back on a lot of stuff that I've done. You have to let that self-doubt in and get uncomfortable with hard and important revelations about yourself. Because once you wake up to these things, you can begin to incite positive change for yourself for the better. And then that'll help change other people and we can actually change the world, but nobody's freaking doing it. Now, I think Barg's goals for this book are right in line with my goals for this podcast and why I felt like this would be a perfect topic to cover this week. We need to join our networks and communities together to have these uncomfortable realizations together, to talk about them, and become better people and communities as a result. So if you could, I'm going to ask you guys this week to please share this episode with your friends, your family, your hairdresser, the guy that takes your coffee order, anyone who you think could benefit from understanding themselves better. Because if we share it in our communities, we're sharing it with the world, and I think we all could use a little better understanding of ourselves. We're all in this together. Okay, one last topic on our agenda is the fun fact of the week segment. So did you know that it has been found that 95% of our brain activity is unconscious? That means that the decisions you are making or the actions that you are taking all lie beyond your consciousness. For me, this is a very fun and freeing thought to think, that my unconscious has already done the work for me. Once I come to a hard decision that requires that conscious plan that the unconscious will nag you about, odds are I already know the answer within myself. I just have to trust myself and trust my gut. This seeming lack of conscious control is actually granting me more control of my total brain capacity. And I think I'll leave you with that this week. And with that, we'll see you next Monday.